ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, it's Anne Jones here, the ABC's Nature Nerd. And you know, the last season of my side project podcast, Nature Sounds, went off in a way that I wasn't expecting. I got all these emails asking to use the recordings. The National Portrait Gallery, musicians, hospitals, research scientists, the Australian Museum, other podcasts, the Museum of Contemporary Art, correctional facility staff, pain researchers, played it to their mum while she self-identifies as a green struggling with people who put their kids to bed, pets, and even someone's cat, who apparently enjoyed it very much. These people have spoken. Find Nature Sounds by Anne Jones wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app.
Is Australia being taken for a ride?
That's the accusation made by former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull at the Public AUKUS inquiry this week, calling the Defence Pact a bipartisan error.
Is Australia spending billions just to boost the US, or are we second-guessing a vital defence agreement? I'm Hamish McDonald.
And I'm Geraldine Doogue. Today on Global Roaming, diving deep on AUKUS.
Well, Geraldine, here we are again talking about AUKUS. And I think the timing is particularly interesting because Friday morning Australia time, we wake up to news that the Prime Minister's had a phone call with Donald Trump overnight. It went straight to the alliance, it went straight to partnerships, and it went straight to AUKUS. And for those that are, worried that America is pulling out or on the edge of pulling out or not going to deliver the submarines, this was almost precisely the opposite in terms of messaging.
We reviewed the significant progress that has been made under AUKUS, which remains full steam ahead. We agreed it was a project that is and will continue to deliver benefits. We discussed the progress on Pillar 2 of AUKUS, where we have agreed our first signature project focused on joint development of cutting-edge payloads and enabling systems for uncrewed undersea vehicles.
Well, that was Anthony Albanese in the early hours of Friday morning. Gerry, I think what's really interesting is that Pillar 2 gets a mention, and that given we're going to be discussing this public inquiry and the scepticism that I think is kind of brewing, is perhaps even growing amongst the Australian public, certainly at a government-to-government level, they're saying that there's nothing to see here, as it were. But I suppose that provides interesting context for the conversation we're having.
Yes, but I just still feel, and I'm sure I'm not alone, that the real trade-offs, what are we particularly worried about? Strangely enough, I think it's less about China than it's about the Americans, but maybe that's the sort of thing that we need to, to flesh out. And of course, the people of Perth, of Western Australia, and I know it's my home state, they're getting ready to greet a very different entity, a permanent entity in their midst. So it's such a potential subject for Australians, and we seem to me to be dancing around the edges.
I guess to bring listeners up to speed as we head into this conversation with Peter Garrett, the likes of Scott Morrison, the original proponent of AUKUS, still very much behind it, even though it's been announced that Australia would only receive second-hand Virginia-class subs.
And I can tell you the one thing that has actually got our potential adversary in China to take notice in the last 5 years has been AUKUS. Why do you think they try and undermine it at every single opportunity?
And in recent months, we've been speaking to the likes of retired Rear Admiral Peter Briggs, as well as Jennifer Parker, both with very different views of AUKUS. Peter Briggs, not hopeful at all about the prospects of us receiving a sub.
The US is nowhere near building enough submarines, even if you bring it down to 55. It is not going to happen.
But Jennifer Parker, herself a former naval officer, says we actually don't have much of an alternative at this point.
The question is, what do we do in place? And there's a lot of options that are put out. Are drones going to solve the problem? Look, they're definitely going to help, but they're not going to fulfil the role of a submarine that needs to go away for months at a time.
Well, Peter Garrett is leading this inquiry, chairing it. In fact, you know him as the Midnight Oil frontman, minister in Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard's governments. But in this context, we're talking to him as the lead commissioner of the public inquiry into AUKUS. It's a private arrangement. It's not being run by government, obviously. It's coordinated by the Australian Peace and Security Forum. Peter Garrett, welcome to Global Roaming.
Thanks very much, Hamish.
You've been in Newcastle, Sydney, Wollongong this week as part of this national tour you're doing. I guess you're used to touring nationally, Peter Garrett. what have you been hearing from Australians about AUKUS?
A couple of things really stand out, Hamish, as we've been conducting these hearings. The first is that a lot of people still really don't know that much about it. We're also broadcasting and live streaming as we go, and most of the feedback we're getting from the public is, I didn't know any of this at all, or very little of it. The second thing we're hearing is that there are a range of fairly significant concerns around AUKUS. Some of them have been well rehearsed in the media, i.e. Will these nuclear-powered submarines arrive on time, if at all, and at what cost? What does it mean for us in terms of the integration of Australian forces with American forces, which is a pretty big part of AUKUS? We've also been hearing from people about, I think a really an underlying thing that's coming through is that a lot of people feel that they haven't been fully and properly consulted. And it's been an incredible exercise because it's enabled people to be heard in a way which they haven't before, and to raise the questions which this inquiry is considering.
Peter, I'm curious though, you're saying that this inquiry is allowing people to be heard in a way that they haven't before. I guess what I want to understand is whether you're actually hearing anything new. The arguments have been pretty well fleshed out from my point of view. Now, you may disagree as to the extent to which that's been a national conversation. I'm just wondering if those people turning up are telling us anything we haven't already heard.
Well, they're certainly asking questions that we are not able necessarily to answer given what's on the public record. So I probably would take exception with your observation, Hamish, but you're probably following, I mean, journalists will be following it more closely, I think, than the general public. So that means that sometimes people, there may be bits of information out there that people have missed, but we have learned a lot. In fact, more than I expected.
But what's a question that you can't answer? What are you thinking about when you say that?
Well, there's a number of questions we can't answer. We still can't actually answer the question of what assessment, if any, was given to the decision to not buy the French submarines in the first instance and actually embark on a series of essential undertakings with the United States and the United Kingdom. On what basis were those decisions made? I mean,
but hasn't Scott Morrison articulated that, you know, whether you accept his argument or not, he has laid it out pretty thoroughly in terms of the delays in the French construction timeline in response to Emmanuel Macron accusing him of lying. He sort of went chapter and verse through all of the issues with the delivery of the French program, as it were.
Well, he did, Hamish, but I'm not sure that all of it was credible. I mean, Mr. Morrison is now working effectively with the American defence industries. Mm. It seems it was something which he actually determined should happen, as opposed to there being the normal processes that defence itself and the political system, if you like, goes about when considering a matter of this kind. Yes, he's provided a post-ad hoc rationalisation, but there's no clarity as to what real assessment, cost-benefit analysis, looking at risks, considering what it meant to in terms of overall defence structures. There's no evidence in front of us that any of that ever happened.
Therefore, I mean, this is what I think bedevils this whole conversation. Therefore, it wasn't just about that. It was about other things. That's what it strikes me as I've tried to wend my way through it, like strategically. Like, there are some very interesting sidebar sort of analyses, as you know, Peter, of people saying, actually, we have to bend over backwards to keep the Americans in our regional neighbourhood. That's sort of not what people are used to hearing. They think the Americans want to be here all the time. Now, there is another whole argument that actually the Americans, we've got to sort of work to say, no, please stay here because we feel safer with you here. And there's also another part of this, which I wonder whether you've had people from, like, it turns out a lot of people in the Navy have been dreaming of nuclear subs for years and years and years. They think it's the ultimate, if you know what I mean, the apex piece of equipment that certainly I wasn't aware of, that they thought this was almost an internal discussion. Have you gone into those areas which are not obvious?
Look, we have, and I'll quickly deal with the question of naval personnel and nuclear subs, Geraldine, that you raised, because one of my fellow commissioners is actually a former chief of the Defence Force who was a naval admiral, Chris Barry, and he's made the observation in the hearings themselves that he and Paul Barrett, when Paul Barrett was head of defence, had actually examined whether or not it was appropriate or feasible for Australia to have nuclear-powered submarines. And they came to the conclusion, this is in the early 2000s, that it wasn't, on cost-benefit analysis, given that we didn't have a domestic nuclear power industry, it wasn't an appropriate course of action. And we have had, we have heard evidence, and we will be hearing, not evidence, but material that comes before us as a commission, and we will be hearing further from probably Australia's most eminent submariner, former retired Admiral Peter Briggs, about those matters.
You're listening to Global Roaming with me, Geraldine Doogue, and Hamish McDonald, and we're speaking with former Labor Minister, Midnight Oil's Peter Garrett, about the public inquiry that he's chairing into AUKUS.
I'm a big believer in, you know, the public inquiry, and clearly there has been an absence of public debate and discussion around this. But I guess what I'm concerned about as I listen to you explain this is that, like, on that point you're making about a cost-benefit analysis having been done previously, well, the concept, the notion of AUKUS as a model didn't exist previously. So can we legitimately argue that that was determined not to be of benefit for us? Well, no one had even conceived of this idea then.
Oh, well, look, you raise an interesting point, Hamish, and I get where the question heads, but perhaps I could say that what the Commission has been able to understand and assess on the information that's in front of it is that irrespective of whether or not AUKUS was in contemplation at the time that, for example, Admiral Chris Barry determined nuclear-powered submarines may not be the best method of the defence of Australia, the uptick of AUKUS has got two components. One of them is this idea that we essentially subsidise and underwrite submarine building into other countries, the United Kingdom, the United States. And the second aspect of it is the idea that we begin to have a closer relationship with the United States, which begins in next year in the Stirling Base in Western Australia, where American and UK, but predominantly American submarines, will be on rotation. And I've got rotation in inverted commas. But here's the key to what we are now encountering in the material that comes to the Commission. And that is that thinking around these issues, including potentially where an East Coast submarine base may go, has been underway for some time, in and around the time when Morrison made the first announcement, but has not involved the public at all. And it's that matter which I think lies at the heart of, A, the need for us to have a public engagement of this kind, but secondly, to ask ourselves a question around where is the national conversation about the kind of defence posture that Australians believe is necessary, because AUKUS represents not a pivot, but a much deepening engagement that we haven't talked about as a public up to now.
And that's exactly what I was getting at in terms of whether we feel, is there a sort of a caution, a stroke torpor in Australian political circles about actually saying these things out loud, lest the Americans become offended?
Well, look, there's a long history of the interaction between the two countries, and we could go back a while. But I guess one of the things that really strikes me is that we've gone back and had a look at the white papers that have been produced around defence, and they make a pretty consistent point about Australia's defence policy, that it ought to be in Australia's national interest. Now, the definition of that and how that is mediated, how that is implemented, is obviously a matter for both the parliaments, for political leadership, but it's a matter for the public as well. And there isn't much confidence, I can report back to you and your listeners, in the United States as what you might want to say is a reliable partner in the multilateral world at this point in time, for reasons that you quite often canvass on Global Roaming. But subsidiary to that is the idea that really what seems to be emerging is that it's the drive to have a forward projection from Australia in the event that perhaps the United States is involved in conflict in the region, and the obvious one is if there were to be a flashpoint over Taiwan, and the extent to which Australian forces and the Australian people themselves would be drawn into that, and is AUKUS a part of that or not?
See, that's just so important for us to have a broader understanding of, isn't it?
But what country commits to a war before it happens? Like, it's a reasonable question you ask, and I think we've asked it many times on this program. What country commits to a conflict before it's upon us?
Well, that's what I've just seen in Poland. So they absolutely do. That's the difference. See, we don't. That's exactly the dilemma. Well, they believe it's on their. They think it's happening.
Well, hold on.
Now.
But you're talking about the sovereignty of Poland.
No, I'm talking about their fear. They're ready to go.
Yes, we haven't because their border is challenged.
Yeah, quite.
So we're talking about something different here. And, you know, Peter's just referenced forward operation. Australia's capacity to be involved in, you know, interoperability is the whole key word within AUKUS. And, you know, right back to when we did our AUKUS miniseries almost 2 years ago now, this was a central question that we explored. Does that notion of interoperability bind us to anything that America commits to in a conflict domain that Australia has not yet publicly done so? And I think it's a relevant question. I just can't think of a scenario in which Australia would say, yeah, we'll be there with all our bells and whistles on years out from it ever even occurring.
Just two quick responses to that, because I know there's probably other areas you want to cover. But we have had senior foreign ministers, prime ministers and defence ministers essentially answer that question, Hamish, by raising the question of whether or not we see ourselves as being linked into or potentially locked into any decision that another country might make to the issue that you're raising. When it comes to the question of defence of Australia, and that's the key here, the key is defence, the AUKUS submarines themselves are broadly recognised, and I don't think that this is controversial, as attack submarines. So you're right, we haven't had a decision like that made because we haven't had a discussion. But underneath what we've been going through in this hearing is, I think, a completely another narrative, if you like. And it's the narrative of people, you know, losing a bit of faith in the political process and not, you know, not feeling really good about the major parties.
Develop that, Peter. Why does it raise that?
Well, it raises that because people don't feel like that they've been included in any kind of meaningful and real conversation about the issues and about AUKUS themselves. And one of the things that the Commission will look at is we will have a look at a cost-benefit analysis because the sums are so large. We will have a look at whether or not there is any chance that these submarines, by way of the material that's in front of us, can arrive. But we will also have a look at whether there is a more prudent way and a way which is considered by some to be a better option for the defence of Australia with the expense that's been made. Underneath that discussion is the discussion that you quite often have, which is so important. Australians themselves saying what they would like to see by way of the expense of public money to defend the sovereign interests of Australia.
You've pointed out the attack capabilities of the AUKUS-class submarines as well as the Virginia-class. What should Australia do given the immense military buildup of China in the Asia region, in the Pacific? Do we pretend that that's not happening?
No, and we're certainly, I mean, there's been no suggestion, by the way, made by any serious submission that's come to us that's ought to be what we ought to be finding or recommending. And it certainly wouldn't be the view of the commissioners, as I understand them. No, I think the question, there's two parts of the question in a way, Hamish. The first is, what are the best tools at your disposal to properly secure the continent, and to the extent that you can make a decision about it, where do submarines fit in? Should they be nuclear-powered submarines? Are there better off-the-shelf submarines that are equally, say, for example, quiet but can go across our northern waters, which the big AUKUS subs probably can't? That's the first question. And the second question is the one about what does the legitimate sovereign defence of Australia actually look like, how do we maintain in our region a cooperative and a productive set of relationships, including clearly with a rising hegemon like China.
But to take concrete examples, like, are you exploring in your inquiry the scenario of an AUKUS submarine, any of the models that we might be getting versus the alternatives, in the context of China conducting live fire exercises in the Tasman Sea or conducting a test of a nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missile in the Pacific or even sending a spy vessel to circumnavigate the country? Like, are you asking whether the calculus might be different for China in those different scenarios?
Well, to the extent that we can, and with the resources that we have at our disposal, we're a publicly funded inquiry with limited resources, we would certainly be considering those issues by way of making findings. We've got terms of reference. They're pretty straightforward and clear. And I think it's our responsibility to come up with a considered view on those terms of reference. Whether people accept or reject, it's another thing. And in terms of the specifics that you raise, well, you know, I can't say whether we'll look at that specific scenario, but I understand the point that you're making.
Like, wouldn't you be interested to know what the answer, like, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm talking to two people that are really engaged with this topic. That's something I wonder about. Like, when those news stories bubble up, whether it's the test in the Pacific or the live fire exercise in the Tasman Sea, you know, I have wondered to myself, would it be different if Australia had those nuclear-powered submarines? Might that have changed China's approach and thinking?
I'm happy to venture a view on it, but I don't think it's the remit of this inquiry in this way. And this is what I've been at pains to stress when we've gone out and spoken to people, including when I'm speaking to the media. For it to be a credible exercise, and we do believe it is credible, and it's transparent, by the way, in terms of what we're hearing and what we're finding and the submissions that we get, we have to look at the terms of reference that we've set ourselves within the capacity that we have. Of course, those sorts of issues ought to be properly considered. There's a raging debate, as you both know and as your listeners know, about what is the most appropriate way for a medium-sized power to defend itself in the region when, you know, historically we've been very closely linked to the United States, but China's a rising power. In fact, it's not a rising power, it's risen. And that, I think, is going to be something which will occupy the minds of, and it should occupy the minds of political leaders, experts, and the media from this point on. The question for us to try and resolve and come to a finding on is whether AUKUS represents the right way for us to approach managing that particular bigger issue, the two superpowers, and secondly, whether it represents good value for money in so doing.
Yes.
And here I must say that what we have emerging by way of consideration, I think it verges on, I won't call it neglectful, but I'm very surprised at the terms of the agreements that we've already reached with the United States and the United Kingdom, which we've discovered the detail of in the terms of this commission process, whereby we pay for everything, but there's no guarantee that we get anything. We don't get our money back, and all of the risk lies in Australia's corner.
Lots of people are turning up. Clearly, I think, that, as Hamish said to me this morning, it looks as though the people who are turning up have made their mind up about AUKUS. I mean, this is the public account of your inquiry. I don't know whether you agree with that or not. But there was a very interesting piece in Crikey by Wanning Sung, who's a very nice writer from UTS in Sydney. And she was saying, having turned up to your inquiry, I think, this week, she said, you know, what's missing is anything that's akin to a passionate anti-movement, you know, like an anti-Vietnam anti-war movement, say, that could grab people's attention and become something that does get taken up in the parliament. A lot of these very important questions, they're sort of abstract, they're vaguely defined, they're terribly interesting, I think, Hamish and I think, but, you know, we do a program like this. Are you conscious of drawing wider people in or not?
So quickly to Hamish's observation, it is mainly people who are opposed to AUKUS, but people who are pro-AUKUS have appeared before us, including the former defence ministers, coalition ministers that I mentioned. And we have invited, I've written to the Prime Minister and the defence minister twice now, inviting the government to make any submissions as it sees fit. And that's as it should be. It can't be an open and public inquiry unless we hear from everybody. And I do hope that they take up that invitation. I actually had a quick look at that Crikey article because a mate sent it to me, Geraldine. With respect to Wanning, I think she's confusing, or not confusing, but she's forward planning for the information that the inquiry itself is potentially accumulating and the findings it might make. That is not our role. Our role is not to build a mass movement around AUKUS or otherwise. Our role is to do what we set out to do. No, it's the role is to hear from people, consider the material that's in front of us. I mean, we're not a court, but we're doing it in that way and in a unanimous way as commissioners come to a view and make findings, which then is sort of a platform of information, if you like, about AUKUS with some thoughts on it, there'll be no doubt about that, for governments, for civil society, for the media and for others to consider.
Do you think, Peter, ultimately part of the bedding for this challenge is that ultimately to challenge AUKUS or to go back on it really would raise the question of when it comes to America versus China, which side are we on? And that that question currently is just too difficult for us to answer.
Yeah, well, look, there's no doubt that it is a very difficult and challenging environment for any government to operate within, including in the terms of your question. I mean, I have some sympathy for Prime Minister Albanese in trying to maintain the stability of relationships with President Trump. And Malcolm Turnbull made the point, and I think he made it fairly, that the situation has changed in every possible way when it comes to international relations, including in our region. But the underlying drive that we see in AUKUS suggests to us that some of these decisions and that discussion has already happened, but it's happened behind closed doors. I don't think it's good for the health of democracy. And we're not going to come up with every single answer. We can't. We don't have those resources.
And of course, it is bipartisan. You're not able to get any friction that does help people, oddly enough, to engage.
No, well, look, Geraldine, that's absolutely true. And I mean, the point is we shouldn't be doing it, is the truth of it. This should have been happening with full parliamentary proper inquiries, with royal commissions, with, you know, Senate committees and foreign relations committees and so on and so forth, bringing witnesses forward and asking for proper briefings and having access to, you know, security rated material and so on and so forth so that they were fully informed. So we shouldn't have to do this. At the same time, the fact that we are doing it, I hope, will energise all of us in a way to think about these issues in a really meaningful way, because they will be with us long after the decisions about AUKUS have come or gone. How we set the country up now for the future depends on how we navigate and how our leaders navigate this period of time. And what I'm concerned, or what I see in what this Commission of Inquiry is hearing, is that some of them may have made up their mind about how they want to navigate it. You're absolutely right. There's bipartisan support, makes it very difficult for scrutiny. In fact, I never thought I'd see the day when Malcolm Turnbull stood next to Bob Carr, and they basically very much agreed with one another. And by the way, for interested parties, they're well worth reading their submissions, given their experience. And then, of course, Malcolm Turnbull says that the one of the few politicians in the parliament who's actually raised these issues or applied any scrutiny of it was the Greens, David Shoebridge. And he's right. You know, he's the only person in the parliament, really, that I can see that's actually even started to ask the questions.
Peter, it's great chatting to you.
Thanks very much, Hamish.
Bye-bye.
See you, Geraldine.
That was Peter Garrett. You know who he is. You don't need me to remind you. The final hearings for this inquiry will happen in Canberra in September. They're hoping to deliver their report by the end of November, Peter is saying, although their website does say the final report is due by the 30th of October, the end of the year. Geraldine, where are you
at on
this?
Well, I'm certainly going to go. What I decided, I want to go and look at those submissions that he referred to by both Bob Carr and Malcolm Turnbull. This is what I do in my spare time. Go and look at submissions about AUKUS.
Get alive.
That's right. That's exactly right. Look, you know, he's taking it as seriously as he should. I think it's fabulous that this is happening. I think there should be more of it.
And in that spirit, I think this is one area where the global roaming audience has contributed a huge amount in terms of the correspondence. So do keep it coming on this issue in particular. Obviously, we've been covering AUKUS now for going on 3 years almost, and we want to continue it and make our contribution to a meaningful, substantial conversation on this in the public domain. global.roaming@abc.net.au is the email address if you've got a suggestion, a thought about the dimensions of this that haven't yet been explored.
And our thanks to producer Aston Brown, our supervising producer Pat Sunderland, and executive producer Laura McAuliffe. Now, we'll see you on Monday when we'll be taking a look at New Zealand, where Prime Minister Chris Luxon has faced his second leadership challenge, of course, in 4 months, and he's survived. Will he survive until the election in November? So until then, Hamish, bye-bye.
See you soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.